like to welcome to Planet Waves FM Mr. Steve Starrs, a journalist currently in the Denver area. Good morning, Steve, and welcome.
Wow, it's really great to be on your show, Eric. I listen quite a bit and read your columns. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. So we are on the Rethinking AIDS list together by Tom DiFerdinando. Tom's been a guest on the program before, and we're, I guess, among the a few journalists on that list.
Yeah, we are. A lot of great people, though.
We're in good company. Celia Farber, yeah. John Rappaport. Yes. This is these are the Hall of Famers from the early in the AIDS era.
Sure. Joan Shinton, too, a wonderful lady, as you know.
Right.
So, yeah, we've got so many good ones. Raznick and so many. I've been following it for a while, as you have, but other things are happening today as the anniversary of 9/11, isn't it? 20
yes.
years.
Yes. And you wrote to me today and said you've been on this story for a while, and you were making some additional connections to COVID. Can you just tell us a little bit about your journalism background, and then we'll jump into the subject area?
Oh, sure. I was actually working for a small ABC news affiliate in the 80s, and I saw very early that things were going really wrong. I wanted to be independent, got away from it. And I've been studying the things that they won't talk about. And my profession, as yours probably, is that I'm very disappointed with us because we are not telling the people the real truth that they need to know, as you know, Eric, and you're doing a great job, you know, getting that information out. But just watching things as they went by through the years, you know, there were a lot of different things. Of course, I found out about the HIV/AIDS myth in the early 90s, went out to interview Peter Duesberg, produced a documentary called HIV equals AIDS, Fact or Fraud. And it's still up there. You can see it, HIV equals AIDS, Fact or Fraud, for free. It's pretty lengthy. We talked to Charles Thomas, Dr. Richard Stroman, various other people at the time. Dave Raznick, I think, was still, he was working with them at that time as well. But it went out and we've had a lot of views over the years. And of course, during that period of time from about 96, when I finally got the documentary out, there were a number of different things that happened, one of which was Oklahoma City. A great film that people might be interested in, not to, just as a pre-taste of all this, Eric, would be the film called The Noble Lie. I don't know if you've ever seen that film, but it talks about Oklahoma City, which really was also another setup, I'm convinced, as you look at it. And the guys that were working on that were trying to expose it and almost got to the point where they were ready to do that when 9/11 hit. But anyhow, you know, when 9/11 hit, of course, that was 2001. I'd had my film out for 3 years. 4 years, actually. It came out in 96 and 97 era. And I was kind of in a funk. I didn't really know what was going on because, you know, there really wasn't any outlet at that point. This Google video and all the internet that we've seen out there that's kind of new to the whole scene, you know, we didn't have that
right
at that time. And you were blocked. I mean, everybody blocked my film, HIV equals AIDS, Factor Fraud. And I couldn't get it out to the people. And of course, right after 9/11, you know, there was really no big outlet to add any dissenting opinion about all of this. And it took me a while to kind of figure out what was going on myself. And then I finally began to look into some of these things. And of course, seeing World Trade Center 7 was like a shot to the stomach. You know, I mean, it really, you know, it hit me hard. I realized something's really wrong with this. So that's kind of how I got into it. How did you get into it all?
Journalism to me has always seemed about digging out the truth. I never have aspired to be the kind of journalist who just says what you're told to say. This goes back a long time to when I was 19 years old, and I've just always understood journalism to be investigative journalism. My background is covering the chemical industry. I began that when I was 19, covering the resettlement of the Love Canal neighborhood, which is a 1,000 homes built on top of and around 23,000 tons of chemical and nuclear waste in Niagara Falls, New York. And so that made an impression on me. And then during Three Mile Island, my father was a publicist for the nuclear industry, so I learned a lot about that from him. You know, even though he was on the public relations team, he still told me everything.
Wow.
So I learned from the best, really.
The other story, yeah.
And the main thing I learned was how to spot a story very young. You know, he explained why Three Mile Island became an issue, and that's because Metropolitan Edison, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and through the spokespeople for Three Mile Island all gave different accounts of the same thing, and then it became a story. So I just learned to look for inconsistencies, and then, you know, did many investigations covering public higher education and other issues, and then there was a PCB accident in my community in the early 1990s, and I put about 5 years of my life covering PCBs and dioxins. And once you start getting those memos, once you start seeing the behavior of government officials and forming a document collection and seeing the paper trail, you know that there's another side to the story. After a while, you just expect it to be there. No mechanic expects to open up the hood of a car and not see an engine.
Right. Right.
It's that simple. The government says one thing, and then when you read the documents, you find out another thing. I mean, there's nothing to it. I have to, you know, say this is not the highfalutin work of magi. It's just like read the fucking documents and see what's in them. I have been struck by the connections between 9/11 and the COVID situation. They seem to be related. You were pointing out the anthrax connection.
Yes. Yes.
And the Patriot Act, the original origins of the Patriot Act. Now, let's talk about the anthrax for a second, because that was a very strange angle on 9/11, right? We're dealing with terrorists knocking down buildings with airplanes, supposedly, and hijackings. And all of a sudden, one day, anthrax starts showing up in the mail of senators and journalists.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. You know, there's a really good breakdown and analysis by a Democratic senator. I'll be talking about both parties in a negative way, so don't worry about it.
You're not thrilled about the political situation, and the problem is rooted in the party system. But go ahead.
Yeah, it is absolutely. But there are a few good people. There's a very good Democrat by the name of John Milkovich, not Malkovich, the actor out of Louisiana, who wrote a book called Robert Mueller, Errand Boy for the New World Order. And he's a kind of a conservative. He's a Dixiecrat, which is different than most Democrats. And he actually explained a lot of what happened with Dr. Bruce Ivins, how he was set up to take the fall for this. But the whole thing came up out of the difficulties that they were having with the Patriot Act. Tom Daschle, a Democrat, and Pat Leahy were sputtering on the whole thing. Remember that when that Patriot Act was handed to them, I think it was a Republican senator held it up and said, "This thing is still hot off the press. I mean, it's still warm. Nobody has seen this. This was all written up before 9/11. We get into everything that was set up before 9/11. We know that, well, we remember Cynthia McKinney was asking Donald Rumsfeld, "Hey, where's the $2.3 trillion that's missing here?" And he didn't even seem to know where it was from the Pentagon Pension Fund. And then, as I understand, the assembly of this attack force in Afghanistan, this all ties into Afghanistan, which is another thing right today, Eric, as you know. The assembly of this NATO force that they were going to dispel to Afghanistan was already being set up, and their marching orders were given out on the 10th of September in 2001. So this, nothing had happened here by just out of the happenstance, as we were led to believe, as you and I watched the horrible news. No, this was an all set up, the Patriot Act as well. And out of that came the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act. This was an addendum, I guess is the word, to the Patriot Act. And it basically was talking about how the healthcare providers, Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, grants specific emergency powers to state governors and public health authorities. Can you believe this? It goes all the way back to December 21st, 2001. It's been updated. It's being put out just like the National Defense Authorization Act. It's being rewritten to re-require. But it's the same thing. It even mentions the Jacobson lawsuit in 1905 over the smallpox law, to take the vaccination over the smallpox, if you recall that. Yeah. I mean, I'm getting too involved.
Let's do the what is it. Yeah, we've got to keep this straightforward, please. What it sounds like you're saying is that a model state legislation act was companion legislation to the federal that the feds asked the states to adopt.
Right. That's what it was. It was the beginning of what we're seeing with this healthcare lockdown, empowering FEMA, but other agencies as well, different groups of people, governors in specific public health emergencies, being declared by state governors and giving them the authority, basically martial authority. That's where it all started with a lot of this. We're seeing it right now.
Okay, let's pause. And we've got to go slowly here because people are not versed in this. You're saying that 9/11 includes an anthrax event.
Yes.
Highly suspicious anthrax event.
Oh, yeah. I should have got back to that. I'm sorry.
Okay, so hold on. But I've got to keep summing it up. 9/11 included an anthrax event. As a result of that anthrax event, which is a quote-unquote health event, model legislation was given to the states by the federal government to declare a kind of health martial law, with the excuse being there was an anthrax attack associated with 9/11.
Right, right. They were trying to tie that together. And, of course, we know that anthrax was a
military-grade anthrax.
That's right. It sure was. And it was sent to people who were enemies of George W. Bush. And it was they used that as an excuse. And, of course, Robert Mueller, who had been appointed head of the FBI
weeks before this happened.
Right. Yep. Right before 9/11, he covered it all up. And of course, John Milkovich in his book about Robert Mueller details all that and shows you all those things. They didn't solve that whole question until about 7 years later when they found a patsy by the name of Dr. Bruce Ivins, who they suicided, I believe. Just wrap it up and close the book on it, Eric.
Okay. So this is a very important point because we are seeing state governments exercise unprecedented authority with no scientific basis in their actions, and somehow they have obtained this power, and, and no one seems to understand how they obtain this power. And you're saying that there is a state law proposed. Now, to your knowledge, did many or all of the states adopt this law?
You know, I know it was floated at that time in December 21 and eventually approved. I didn't actually follow the progression of it, but it's been there and it's been updated, and it was recently updated again. I was going to look for that to kind of tie it all together. But you can see the beginning of it was December 21st, 2001. So it was right after 9/11 and after these anthrax attacks, when people still thought this was a terrorist attack. When it really wasn't, it was another creation of the Bush regime.
Yeah, I was in shock from 9/11 for a long time, and it was hard to see what it was, but the anthrax just seemed ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, it was obviously targeted right at various people who were trying to resist the Patriot Act at that time. And as I understand, the White House staff were on CPRO, which was a anecdote to it. A lot of people knew what was going on. This anthrax was a weaponized, kind of an ionized spore version that could become very easily aerosoled. It didn't last long in nature. It was very hard hitting, very quick. But it was obviously, this was something that came from Fort Detrick, the Ames strain, as I understand. And that wasn't supposed to get out, but by mistake, that slipped out. And then suddenly everybody found out this wasn't a foreign anthrax. It was created in some foreign laboratory. Once again, created right here in the United States, made in the USA.
Right. This is so challenging for people to understand this for psychological reasons and, of course, propaganda reasons, because there's many Americans who can't believe their government's capable of anything like this. Forget the fact that it might have been taken over by a kind of a Tammany Hall regime.
Right, yeah.
Which it seems to have been in the Bush era. That really was a change of the guard to have this new group in, the New American Century group.
Yeah.
In a whole new theory of how to do this shit.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it's progressed all this time. And so as we mark this calendar date, the 11th of September, 20 years later, we see the footprints of how this thing was put to place and how it keeps progressing to this point right now.
Yeah, it seems that you don't even need to look far to see a direct line from 9/11 to COVID. There's so many similarities and how it's done. But it's just that COVID seems so much larger, and there was so much apparatus already in place at the time.
Yeah. And we see the HIV, the whole HIV scam that ran before this. So, of course, Fauci's been around for 37 years now, scaring people with germs and putting out toxic medications. I mean, I'm surprised a man, you know, I when Trump was running for office, you know, one of the first things we said he needs to do is fire Anthony Fauci, get rid of him immediately. Who? Anthony Fauci. You still don't know who he is after all these years.
Well, he promised to do so, and he didn't. He did at the end of his term. He promised to fire Fauci. Giving the impression he would do it during the lame duck phase after the election.
Right. Yeah, it's too bad because he was a very big disappointment to so many people and still is. And I think he's going to remain in the penalty box until he admits that his warp speed vaccine was a warp speed disaster. Well, we're seeing that all over. And of course, you've covered it, Eric. We and our COVID group, our RA COVID group, we're covering this continually, seeing the results there. VAERS deaths confirm it. We know that.
You don't think that Trump was put up to this whole operation Warp Speed? I don't get this came out of his mind. I think he was told what to do.
Yeah, I think he was too. As a matter of fact, there was a period of time when he looked very sick, and some of the commentators were saying Trump doesn't look well. I think he was being provoked at that time. And about a week later, the lockdown began. So I think he saw it, but it was too late at this point for him to be able to do anything, because he had, he let Fauci in the gate, and by this time, you know, everything was already up and running. So,
right. Okay, what else can we say? Now that it's 9/11 and we're on the 20th anniversary on this very day, what are a couple of things we can point out to people for, you know, where to spot a problem? You said you had assisted architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth as a volunteer. What did you do for them?
Yeah, well, of course, it took me a while to catch on to what was going on, too. And it wasn't until I saw Loose Change. You know, I put my film up there. People called me and said, hey, you had to put your film up on Google Video because, I thought I'm not selling it anymore. Let's get it out. I'm really disappointed. People aren't getting to see this. Next thing I know, the phone started ringing. And I mean, hundreds of thousands of people were seeing my film. And where are they getting this? It's up on Google Video. So I went over to Google Video and there was Loose Change and In Plain Sight, Police State, Freedom to Fascism, some of those films, Eric. I'm going, wow, hundreds of thousands of hits already. So suddenly people were starting to see in late 2004 and 5 and 6 all these films that had been blocked for so long. And there were a huge number of people that were waking up to what happened on 9/11. And I went looking at it thinking, okay, I'm going to expose this as another one of those crazy flat earth conspiracy theories. And I started looking at it. And that's when I saw World Trade Center 7. I actually did have questions. I was really open to the questions. But when I saw that, I said, oh, my God, this had to be controlled demolition. It was. Now, Richard Gage hadn't really been involved in this up until that time. In about 2006, a year or two later, he got involved as an architect out in San Francisco and wanted to start some things. And he started Architects and Engineers for 911truth.org, his organization today. And I was in touch with him. I told him about my work with HIV/AIDS and Rethinking AIDS and people like that. And I said I'd be glad to help you out and get you a little started here. And I was just an advisor for about 2 or 3 weeks. And he finally found some really good people out there to really push it. But I warned him. I said, you're going to eventually have to mount the court cases, which has always been our problem, Eric. You know, we can have a lot of scientists and people like that know about these things, but the government is not going to fix itself. We know that. They have to be prodded, pushed, and forced to change things. So we've got to get these legal measures in place if we really want to do that.
Well, the court system is part of the government, and the judges are not mostly elected. The important judges, the federal judges, and, well, the federal judges are all appointed. They're not elected. Yeah. And so they're also the creatures of the political system.
Yep, they are creatures of nature and habit, you know, of course, and they get in those positions for reasons, and they respond the same way often. Occasionally, you'll get a good ruling, and depending upon the jurisdiction in various places. But, you know, we've had to mount so many cases, and we've done that with our Rethinking AIDS. We've won some cases, but we still haven't pressed the case to the point to where we could stop COVID, because really, COVID is an outgrowth of HIV/AIDS. Just like, 9/11 was an outgrowth of what they did with Oklahoma City, or ongoing affairs of WMDs, which was the only time they really caught anybody there. But the war in Iraq, you know, the war in Afghanistan, which was targeted to take out 50 to 100 Taliban terrorist leaders, 50 to 100 guys. And here we are now, 20 years later. Look
disaster. They did promise the Afghanistan thing is kind of one of those quote unquote surgical strikes. We're going to get these guys and be done.
Right. Yeah, that was what we were sold on anyway, because nobody wanted to see another Vietnam. And remember, even old man Bush on the Gulf War said this is not going to be another Vietnam. And it wasn't either. It was over in about, 6 weeks to 2 months, something like that.
You mean the first Gulf War?
Yeah, the first Gulf War, right.
Well, he knew to get in and get out. Like, he was playing it politically and had a lot of coalition support. The second Gulf War was a whole different thing. Yes. Most of the countries refused to get involved. Again, I think it was only Canada, Australia, and the United States, or England maybe. Basically the former British Empire, except for India. And
a little help.
And nobody was all that interested. It was completely up to the United States.
Yeah, it was really a mess, and it turned into a disaster. And, of course, there were no weapons of mass destruction. And everybody laughed at that when Bush made jokes about it. The man, George W. Bush, is a sadist psychopath, friends. I mean, he's a dangerous individual. He should be held accountable for all these crimes as well as everyone else. But, you know, we've seen these things happen. They grow in bits and pieces, and they tie together, just like this Model State Emergency Health Powers Act is going to be and has been upgraded, just like the NDAA. All of these things are a lockdown, friends, on our lives, on our freedoms, on our ability to control our own government in future.
Right. And most people don't see it that way. Most people with COVID, I mean, it's hard to have an honest survey, but it seems to be, first of all, the media is in its full Operation Mockingbird mode. All saying the same thing over and over again, with the notable exception of Tucker Carlson. Mm-hmm. How do you have Fox News, The Wall Street Journal, Amy Goodman, Rachel Maddow, and CNN all in agreement?
Yeah. Big corporate control, virtually all of them, actually. And you know that as a journalist on the alternative side, or bringing the real news, I call it, you know, out to the people, which we've been doing. I appreciate your work and so many others. We just have to gain an audience, and we're getting that bigger and bigger all the time, Eric. But we're still running behind the curve. You know, we've got 99 people in a panic coming down the staircase, and we're trying to go up. You know, I mean, it's really dangerous, especially with this fear, the icy talon of fear in people's minds about this virus, COVID, which we've looked at, you know, from the origins and the existence of, to the effectiveness of, or whether it's actually dangerous or not. And then what they've done, as you know, to keep us from using things like ivermectin and HCQ vitamins and things like that to treat it properly. Instead, they're giving you this toxic vaccine. I mean, it's just it's a madhouse with the media. The media is to blame for all of it.
I think it is. Yeah. I mean, to me, you know, you expect governments to lie. I mean, that's a given. And CDC is telling the truth when they say that there are 7,000 Americans that have reported dead relatives, or doctors have reported dead patients, 7,000 from the Vaccine Adverse Events Database. Very important part of the system installed in 86 when the act was passed, which allowed the vaccine manufacturers to be indemnified. And so as part of that, a system was put in place to warn people about adverse events. And this data is, or at least some of it, is published. And CDC admits 7,000 dead from this vaccine, more than any, I think more than the last 30 years combined of adverse events. And if that information were on page one of the New York Times, people would be outraged. And so to me, the difference is not the government's conduct so much as it is the conduct of the media not allowing this information out to the public.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It is a media problem. We have about five corporations that control 95% of the media. I work part-time in as a volunteer at a small independent station in the Denver area, KHNC 1360. And we are just one of the few stations out there that are actually bringing people the very truth. Like, you know, you'd be very welcome to come on our shows, by the way, Eric, and just to talk about these kinds of things. And we have a very big growing audience, but at the same time, there's no way we can keep up with all this headline news and head alignment news is what it really is. that you're hearing. I mean, they're not telling us the truth. VARS reports, I think, over almost 15,000 deaths right now. They're saying that may only be 1%. My God, that could be 1.5.
Let's talk about the correction, right? Because so they've admitted 13,000. I don't know if it's increased. I have not checked the past week or two. But they discounted half of them because they were outside the country. So when I say 7,000, I just mean Americans. But in going from the reported to the actual, what are the different data models of that?
You know, I have heard there was a fellow by the name of Dr. Lazarus, and he is you can read his report on the VARS report. And he said that there only 1% of the actual deaths and serious maladies that were resulting from vaccines were reported. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not, but if VARS has 13,000 or 14,000 up there, well, 1% would be 1.4 million deaths.
The number I'm using is, to be on the conservative side, within limit, 10%. I'm saying let's pretend, and I'm speaking mostly to Americans, so I say we know for sure there have been 7,000 reports of deaths. If that's only even 10%, and we know it's higher, that's 70,000. That's more than American casualties in the Vietnam War by quite a long shot.
Right. And if it's 1.4 million, it's three times the number of people killed in World War II. You know, that's how big it could be.
Combatants killed in World War II.
Combats, right, yeah.
Right.
And then the 58,440 post-COVID vaccines reported hospitalizations. These are cases of reported hospitalizations, 58,000 of those with VARS. So it's pretty awful, really.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that the Delta variant is nothing more than the vaccine being tested as a quote-unquote infection.
Right, or as our friend Dr. Luc Montagnier had said, which seems to be confirmed, that the vaccine would be producing these variants. I don't know if he's right or not. Luc Montagnier, the discoverer of HIV, the original one, I suppose he won the Nobel Prize for that. You know, Luc has been around for a long time disputing even Gallo for this claim.
Well, and Gallo stole his work, but even Montagnier admits that the HIV virus has not been isolated and purified, that it doesn't exist by the laws of virology.
Right.
This is not a mere technicality, isolation and purification. This is, does it exist? If you're pulled over driving a blue Chevy going 90 in a 65, there damn well better be a blue Chevy.
Yeah, right. There's no car at all. If you're on a skateboard, it's not likely that happened. Yeah. And that's kind of what's happened, as we know, with the isolation argument. We've been looking at this and making this point. CDC does not have a pure sample. If you call the CDC and you had a great lab and you said, well, hey, you're certified hazmat or whatever, you bring this in, we want to grow this virus and see how it works. And they say, well, we don't have one.
No government can produce evidence of a sample, of a purified sample. So that's all inference. And this is what people don't understand. This entire thing is based on presupposition, inference, and computer modeling.
Right.
It's a bunch of assumptions. And the only validity people have is, oh, they know someone who got sick. And I always ask, with what? How do you know what they're sick with? Well, they tested positive. Well, now let's look at the test. This is getting into territory way too deep for most people to bother themselves with. But this is the work of journalism. You know, there's an old expression from around the time of the revolution that people want crops without plowing the field. How does that one go? You know, they want all the results without the work. And I don't think that's actually true. I think they don't want the results, therefore they don't do the work. Anyone who does an hour of reading on 9/11 will see at least there are questions, and it's the same with COVID.
Yeah. Who benefits? And we know what happened, the plan for a new American century, the PNAC group, of course, and yes, Mossad, I'm sure Saudi Arabian interests were involved there too. There were a lot of people. And
Saudi hijackers. They blame Afghanistan. They've got, of the 19 accused, 17 were Saudi and 2 were Emirati. There were no Afghanis or Iraqis involved, according to the official conspiracy theory.
Yeah, and that's, isn't that crazy? And we spend all this time in these other places fighting these wars to stop something that was virtually non-existent there.
It seemed the thing that wanted to stop in Afghanistan was the ban on opium growing. I mean, what happened, I had neighbors who were Afghani in Karzai's tribe. Wow. I lived next to them for 7 years. So I could go down to the candy store, basically, and speak with Afghanis who knew Karzai and were in his clan.
Wow.
And they said, "We're not hurting in Afghanistan. The money is flowing freely. Suddenly everyone can grow opium."
Mm-hmm. Wow.
"Don't feel bad for us. We're getting rich on this."
Oh, I'd love to hear from those same people today and see, you know, give their retrospective view of it all. That's amazing. They were the poppies and opium fields, and we had that very big had a lot of problems with opiates, as you know. You know, the oxys and everything
is all derived from natural opium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so this fed the pharmaceutical industry the true pandemic of our times, is this Holocaust from opioids.
I believe that. I really do. And we've had so many other diseases that we've been able to make progress on, or possibly with all the money that's gone to fight things like HIV and the HPV vaccine, you know, that one, of course. Great film by Joan Chittenden, Sacrificial Virgins, on that. We've seen this before since Fauci, as you mentioned before, I think earlier, that he went into work to change the vaccine indemnity situation so that these companies were not going to be sued in 1978, I think it was, wasn't it? And just 2 years after the swine flu disaster. Oh, no, I'm sorry, 86, 2 years after the HIV announcement, he did that. So this man's been a lifelong criminal, and the big pharma, as we talked about the opioids, we've talked about so many other things. Cancer research has gone nowhere. Our friend David Raznick, Peter Duesberg, trying to advance new studies and diagnostics that could be just groundbreaking in cancer research, not funded, while we spend all this time chasing these phony germs. And it has a lot to do with 9/11 and what happened then on that day, as we're trying to point out.
Right. Let's talk about the proof of concept of COVID being the AIDS scam.
Okay.
Now, the backstory on this is there is a guy named Gallo, I believe, in what is now Fauci's position. Fauci comes on board in 83, I believe, right when Gallo is at his peak of power. But it's Gallo and Heckler, the HHS secretary, running the show. Mm-hmm. They have punted to them these presumed outbreaks in New York and San Francisco of gay men dying, originally called gay-related immune dysfunction, GRID. That's how I first read about it in the New York Times in 82 or 83. And they, like often happens, presume a viral cause with no proof.
Mm. Yep.
And held a press conference. I've got the astrology chart for that press conference. It's quite a piece of work. And
I bet.
They announced that it's the probable cause of AIDS. And then 2 days later, the press runs with it. There's not a shred of science to back it up. There's not one paper that is meekly substantiating what they're saying. The AIDS virus was a retired leukemia virus that never once caused a case of leukemia. discovered by Gallo. Human T-cell leukemia virus type 3. They've got an unemployed virus. They've got a disease without a viral cause. They put the two together, change the name, and have a press conference. Yeah. This is so outrageous. I can barely speak. And the only reason I can even accept this concept is I've seen it happen so many other freaking times in federal government history.
Yep. Science by press conference, they call it.
Science by press conference, or political science, really, is what it is. Everyone says, follow the science. They don't realize they're talking about political science.
Right.
Not, you know, not Nikola Tesla working in his lab, or Alexander Graham Bell and Mr. Watson. It's a different science than that.
Quite a bit. Yes, quite a bit. And you can't see these things, and they know that. Nobody can. And, of course, when Gallo's results weren't even published at that point or peer-reviewed to any substantial amount, the the press conference was announced. It was a political year. They wanted to get something done about AIDS so they could go on with the campaign, 1984. And it did provide one good benefit. That was, it was going to look at the blood supply and start cleaning the blood supply. But outside of that, there was virtually nothing there. If they'd have said, Eric, if they said, we have found a probable cause of AIDS, and it is one of these viruses, so we're going to use this to clean the blood supply, it might have been one thing. But they said, the probable cause of AIDS. And so once that wording got out, you know, there was no other focus. It was just like Adolf Hitler in a virus suit. You know what I mean? We had to focus everything on him now. And there was never any backing to it all. And when the results finally came out, we find that half the people who had AIDS didn't have the virus. You know what I mean? Or acquired immune deficiency syndrome, because it was the same disease that they'd been having for a long time due to opioids. They called it the dwindles of the old days.
What year is this? I hadn't heard this.
Well, you know, in the medical history, if you've ever read Robert Wood Bernstein's book, Rethinking AIDS, he talks about the medical history of drug addiction. We had seen that what they called the dwindles or long-term effects of drug addicts shooting drugs from the early 1900s and even after the post-Civil War era using opioids. They'd get this kind of a fade in and fade out of health, same kind of thing you'd see in an AIDS patient. The Centers for Disease Control had seen this before. It was all in the medical history. And then, of course, the gay men using poppers was a whole new trend. And that started, but it was already pretty well documented by the Centers for Disease Control very early on in the 80s. This is not an infectious disease. It's drug-related. Right.
Notably, the original candidates were hemophiliacs, IV drug users, and gay men. Yep. This is the original. And then somehow Haitians get slipped in there. But the three main constituencies were IV drug users, gay men, and what was the third one? Hemophiliacs. From blood transfusions. And there's always some little teeny proof, like Arthur Ashe. He was killed by AZT, as far as I understand it, not by AIDS.
I think you're right. I actually met two gentlemen who were both hemophiliacs who had survived their groups, and everybody that they knew of in their support group was dead. They said, we didn't take AZT, we survived. And they were in their 40s and 50s, so they were quite paranoid, because they said we're not supposed to be alive. But, you know, people, hemophiliacs increased their lifespan during the HIV infection crisis, if you call it that, by about 20 to 25 years. Not because HIV was good for them, just because they were getting better treatment for hemophilia all the time. And, I mean, these things were pretty evident from the beginning. And the reason why we bring this, it sounds like we're really lapsing back into HIV and AIDS, which we can do so easily. Eric, maybe all your listeners aren't following. It's through 9/11 and everything going on right now. But it's all the same game, friends. It's all the same game. They're using fear tactics to launch programs.
Right. They're using fear tactics to launch programs. And the modus operandi are all the same through all of these crises. So it doesn't matter what the content is. It's the structure of the ideas, and it's the structure of the process, and it's the way that it's done, essentially terrorizing the population and then moving in with the solution. But the solution doesn't serve the people who are supposed to be affected adversely. I mean, all you have to do is look at all these COVID mitigation measures. We're back to where we started. It's August 2021, September 2021. We're back to where we were in February of 2020 now. Even though half the country has been injected, half the world quite possibly has been injected, and you've got everyone walking around wearing masks just as scared as they were in February, March of 2020. Nothing has gotten better.
Right. Yes, spot on there, Eric. Exactly. That's exactly what's happened here. I mean, it's just a roundabout, and most people, it's hard for me to even believe this much time has passed since that February of 2012, you know, actually 2019, around in that area, wasn't it? Or early, late 2019, November, December. We were hearing those reports, and I made some bad predictions. I made one that was accurate. I said, this is going to be all over by April 15th of 2020. And it essentially was. I mean, there, you could already see it was curbing. It was just another flu germ that wasn't going to make a big issue. The thing I missed it on was I had no idea they were going to use this to create such mania, Eric. I just missed that coming. I thought this is going to be like Ebola 1, 2, 3, Zika virus, Honda virus, Legionnaires. You know, it's just another one of Fauci's games that he keeps playing every so often. I had no idea this worldwide lockdown was coming to the Great Reset, Klaus Schwab. What they're trying to do, ladies and gentlemen, they're trying to take apart all civilization. That's what's happening.
And remake it in kind of like Civilization 2.0, the internet version.
Yes.
When you look at the structure of this and the movement of it, everything's moved toward high tech. The drug solution, this injection, is a high tech solution. Moderna is advertising their stuff as a platform or operating system. All the major tech companies are invested in the so-called vaccine. This is a takeover of high tech and big pharma, who to me it seems want to get all of this medical money. They want to be the medical industry.
Yeah,
medicine in the United States is one of the biggest industries, right? So-called healthcare.
Right.
So we lost, you know, Obamacare was basically derailed. We were talking about universal health care for all 10 years ago. Right? That was supposed to be a real conversation. The public option gets taken out of that. It's completely gutted. Obamacare getting basically gutted by a series of court decisions, some of which kept it. But this left an opening, I think, essentially for somebody to vie for that pot of money. This trillions of dollars going through in healthcare, as it's called, is now being replaced by big tech injections, big tech medical visits, telemedicine, and high tech solutions to everything.
Sure is. Sure is. And you know, I mean, one of the first things that Trump should have done looking at the dilemma of health care, and I've got a book here written by an attorney who was really behind my film. He wanted me to work some more with him, and I was just so burned out, Eric, I couldn't do it. But he was right on. He said health care is going to be the back-breaking controlling point of everything in the United States in the future. And he was right. But, you know, one of the things that we were looking at together there at that time was just this idea that if we don't fix health care, I mean, get it back out of the hands of big pharma and onto the back into the hands of really good doctors and medical people. You and I both know there's some great people out there in this business or know these things. If we're not doing the right research, if we're funding all kinds of scams, if we're just supporting big pharma, well, who does Donald Trump appoint? None other than Alex Azar, who is an attorney with Eli Lilly, to be head of HHS. And then you got this idiot Francis Collins, and Fauci's left alone to his devices and his evil. I mean, that you could see that was a formula for disaster, putting a high-tech or a big-tech pharma industry attorney and head of HHS. I don't. Maybe Ron Paul would have been a better one if you could have talked him into it, or somebody who understood medicine and money and could figure out how to solve this problem. So that was from the beginning a very bad move, and you know, we haven't fixed it. We could do things if we had the right people, I believe.
Right. It always makes me wonder who is calling the shots. You know, people were convinced that Trump was so different, but there's a meta government. There's something much larger. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was a child, my grandfather, Sam Coppolino, explained to me that the president is a figurehead. Mm-hmm. I was a kid. This had to be like 50 years ago. And he's saying the president's just a figurehead. He wasn't especially radical guy either. He was a letter carrier.
He had it figured out.
And a postmaster during World War II. He set up the, I believe he was the deputy postmaster of the Honolulu Post Office for the Pacific Fleet. So he wasn't stupid, but he wasn't a political person. But here he explains to me as a child that the president of the United States is a figurehead. My dad can't believe he explained this to me. I'm like, that's what I have direct recollection of him using that word, Grandpa Sam. And I was little. And so I don't think most people get what that means. The presidency is invested with all this pomp and circumstance. And people think, oh, it's so powerful. But the president is like the titular CEO of Capitalism Incorporated. And there are are infinitely more powerful people. Biden is the ultimate example of the figurehead president. The guy can't complete a sentence.
Right. You know, you almost think that that is by plan, that he can't, because they want a double zero in that position. That way he can't, you know, you can't blame him for anything. He's crazy anyway, you know. And who's actually calling the shots here? I mean, this is just a dismantling of civilization that's taking place here. This is the year zero, like in the movie The Killing Fields, if you saw that years ago. I mean, they're taking everything apart. They want us fighting, whether you're a vaccine supporter or vaccine against. The political parties, we have critical race theory, we have Black Lives Matter, we have concerns, we have racism, we have all kinds of, everybody's losing their money, their business, and everybody's blaming each other for trying to work and make some. I mean, it's just a complete chaotic situation. And I don't know how that figures in the astrology charts as much, Eric. Maybe you can explain it to me, but could you see those kinds of things coming?
Oh, not on this scale. And I tend to not be a doom and gloom predicting astrologer, but what I do see coming. So, okay, with the Pluto Saturn conjunction of early 2020, we knew we were dealing with the same cycle that was part of 9/11. So 9/11 happens with Saturn and Pluto at opposition in the summer of 2001, with the August 6th presidential daily briefing being written with the opposition in exact.
Wow.
And then 9/11 happens just over a month later. And now we're at the conjunction of Saturn and Pluto. And so when you even read the stuff written prior to 2020, books that can't, you know, the particularly Cosmos and Psyche, that came out in the came out around like maybe 02 or maybe 03 maybe, you can tell from that we're in the cycle of whatever Saturn Pluto is about, and one of the things it's about is so-called plagues, but it's also really about disasters and reactionary movements. So there was a Saturn Pluto opposition just as Johnson is ramping up the Vietnam War. I mean, they start that with Kennedy's body still at the funeral home Tippit, whoever's body it was. And by 64, they've got their Tonkin Gulf false flag thing in the summer of 64. And Saturn and Pluto are at opposition then, that makes an exact contact in 65. That was the Vietnam War. So it's like JFK leading into the Vietnam War. Then the conjunction that follows is the Reagan Revolution. So that's in 82. So right there, we're into Reagan, the Heritage Foundation, abstinence only, and AIDS explodes right at the conjunction of Saturn and Pluto. That's when those initial cases are coming. And I took a class at SUNY Buffalo in, 81, 82, in the fall of 82 with Dr. Robert Knox Denton, called American Norms and Deviation. And he was talking about Kaposi's sarcoma. It didn't have a name yet. He's saying, why are all these young people getting Kaposi's sarcoma? This is a professor at a university questioning this in the fall of 82. Wow. He's telling his students about this. And so that was the conjunction. And this begins, and AIDS was a national mania. People don't remember today. It's gone down the memory hole. Young people have no concept of what this was about and how serious this was. And this war on gay people turned into a war on everyone through AIDS. And this is Saturn-Pluto conjunction. Then the opposition is at 9/11. Now the conjunction is at COVID. So it's the same thing every time these two planets form an opposition or a conjunction. Now there's two frightening things happening, I think, that I'm not saying this to instill fear, only concern. And possibly motivating people for loving action, being reflective and whatever else you might do, is that the United States is at the Pluto return of the Declaration of Independence and the Articles of Confederation. So whatever chart you use for the U.S., we are at the Pluto return. That's to say Pluto has a 248-year orbit, and it's back where it started. That's a big deal, just like your Saturn return at age 29 or 58.
Wow.
Big planetary returns. So this is why my prediction was wrong. I thought, all right, this is going to drag out forever in the United States. Apparently, Australia is a client state of the United States, and it's kind of like the testing lab to lock down an entire city for six PCR positives.
Yeah.
Anyway, the U.S. Pluto return is engaged fully. It's exact next spring. This is the kind of reshaping of the world that was originally built in the United States democratic model, such that it ever was. So that's happening. And then the next thing that happens is in the spring of 23, Pluto enters Aquarius. Mm-hmm. For 22 years, Pluto is slowing down. It's going to be in Aquarius for the rest of our lives, for the most likely, for those of us who are slightly older. And there's no seeing the other side of that Pluto in Pisces. We haven't even begun Pluto in Aquarius yet. And to me, it reminds me of Black Mirror, the Netflix series, the authoritarian takeover by high tech, where everything, it becomes a high tech biosecurity state, the like of which we are just getting an inkling of now. And if we push back now, we can work the evolutionary side of Pluto and Aquarius. And there are people pushing back. You who are listening to this are most likely one of them. I don't know how many hardened skeptics get to Planet Waves FM. So one of the things I would suggest is take heart if you are objecting to this and you can see what's going on and you're being shouted down or being accused of taking sides politically against the better the better advice of the good Dr. Fauci, who's nothing but a political and corporate actor. We have to get our shit together and not knuckle under here. This is not a joke. But if you're resisting, take heart, because there's a lot of resistance that's just not getting coverage.
Yeah, I think we both agree there. You know, having worked with HIV/AIDS and even 9/11, I saw growth among those of us who call ourselves the HIV dissidents. Yeah, I saw it growing, but I never saw it really taking root, because by the time it did, HIV and AIDS had kind of gone off the page around 95, 96. The new drugs, remember, they told us all that. And Magic Johnson has now been HIV positive for 30 years, ladies and gentlemen. He never got sick because he never took AZT. We warned him. Peter Duesberg's office warned him. But it was kind of disappearing when 9/11 came. And then that started to catch fire for a little bit. And then, of course, we had the housing shortage and a lot of other things during that era of time. And it's waned a little bit. Now this has come. But it seems like to me, Eric, is like you're pointing out, maybe there are. I'm not really deep into astrology, but I can see cycles. I can see how cycles work. And I can see how you might measure those with movements of planets. Absolutely. And I could say maybe we are at a point of where this resistance is going to change things. What do you think? Is that optimistic? Can I be that way?
Yeah, I'm more guarded than that, knowing human nature. Yeah. As a student of A Course in Miracles, I should be all, you know, sweetness and starlight. But I am just, as a human being, concerned. Now, at the same time, I'm well familiar with resistance movements here in New York, and there are a lot of them. There are meetings in every town. Now, I don't know what they're getting done, but there are a lot of people who are aware. I think that the people who are aware better start working more, do more. Don't just have meetings. You're going to have to get your hands dirty to work on this issue. The issues are all related, so it doesn't really matter where you put your effort. It doesn't matter which part of it you work on. Just get busy doing something that matters, that makes a difference, even if it's a small difference. As a journalist and one of the people who takes being part of the Fourth Estate seriously, I am doing my best to, you know, propose that people get involved with journalism. Mm-hmm. Because this is the failure. Without journalism, there's no keeping the government honest. With it, you actually can.
Yep. And that's the big difference now that we have compared to what we were facing 20 years ago when 9/11 happened. We were locked out of the media, and the media wasn't as bad. Well, it was actually, it just wasn't as noticeable then. But we, when the internet broke open for that very short period of time and all this information started getting out, and my film was on one of the top 10 of the films being seen on free Google at that time. People were asking, how come I've never heard this information before? And somebody in the comments would say, well, duh, you know, they don't want this getting out. I mean, we have that opportunity now, Eric, to reach people. Your audience is probably motivated. You know, I don't care if it's Facebook, Twitter, Telegram, whatever. I don't really use a lot of those things. I do a lot of email. I do a lot of radio shows. But just get out there and use it and speak your mind, and don't be afraid to tell the truth. And we'll try to give you the best references we possibly can. Go to ae911truth.org. ae911truth.org.
Yep, I'm pushing this hard. Watch this whole documentary. Buy a copy of it. It's $20. Or whatever it is, get your CD, DVD copy, and watch the whole thing end to end. In all of my presentations on 9/11, I always swipe the psychologist speaking, 15 minutes of psychologists at the end. I'm not sure if you remember that, but they got a bunch of psychologists to explain the psychological complexes involved in the denial of what's plainly before everyone's eyes. So they're like right. The shaman explaining to the people what's actually going on in their minds. But the physics of this, I was just rewatching parts of AE of Explosive Evidence. It's astonishing. The thing is supposedly falling based on gravity. The towers 1 and 2 are falling based on gravity.
Yeah.
And there are projectiles going out 600 feet.
Yes.
Laterally being propelled sometimes. Out of a volcano, landing 600, 700 feet away from the buildings. Gravity pulls things down. It does not propel them outward. So what, you get informed and you'll feel better. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say it defies physics. And you know, obviously these buildings turn into essentially volcanic ash in midair. I did ask Richard Gage, this is a good point. I said, Richard, Do we have any idea what the incendiary device was here? I mean, how did this happen? Was it a thermonuke? Was it a mini nuke? Was it a directed radiation?
No, I think it was straightforward controlled demolition. Thermite, nanothermite. This is good. We're in the golden age of materials right now.
Yeah.
They have good explosives.
Sure.
And why those skimp? Things, the very best.
We see the traces of them, don't we? And, you know, we weren't really, it wasn't as important, I thought, to him. He said, we may not know the atomic structure of how this material turned into powder in midair, but we do know it wasn't a pile driving gravity effect, and it wasn't brought on by gasoline and jet airplane crashes. It was a controlled and orchestrated demolition.
What about the firemen talking about lava? The guys talking about lava, molten steel flowing like a foundry. Molten steel hours after the building has fallen down? How do you maintain weeks? That was weeks later?
Yeah, weeks later. I think all the way into December it was still there. And it was so hot it would melt the soles off your shoes just standing near it. I mean, just the questions here about all this that happened are just way beyond anything that would be explained by just a controlled demolition or a collapse or, you know, something hitting those buildings and you know, haphazardly toppling back and forth a little bit and maybe crumbling. That's about the best those planes would have ever been able to do. And you obviously cannot. I mean, if you have a kerosene heater or if you use a gas stove, it doesn't melt your stove when you light natural gas.
No, if you lit the gas stove and the burners and pots melted, that would be a really weird day. Steve, with apologies, I must wrap up. Remind me the name of your film, please.
My film, HIV Equals AIDS, Fact or Fraud. You can see it if you go to my website, AIDSfraudvideo.com. AIDSfraudvideo.com.
Yeah. Steve, thank you so much. Yep. I will link to you. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, Eric, we'll have to have you on our show sometime. Thank you.
We'd love it. Bye. Bye for now.